Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And this is the Shame-Free Zone. I'm your host, Veronica Monet. That was Susie Chin. You know, I was actually just kind of sinking into my own theme song there and thinking about the book party and what a wonderful song that is. She's actually got a whole album with a lot of beautiful songs about empowering women around their sexuality. And before we get started tonight, I actually want to let you know that I am in the midst of teaching a workshop with Francesca Gentile. Gentile, I'm always trying to put a little French accent on her Italian name. Anyway, she and I are co-teaching a teleseminar called Befriend Your Inner Whore. And you'd be joining us about halfway through, but you'd get access to the podcast and all the files that are already uploaded. But the last half is going to be live, and it's going to be live starting tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Tomorrow, Tuesday, we're doing our teleseminar from 6 to 7 p.m. Every Tuesday evening, and then it'll be live again the following Tuesday. And we're actually offering the teleseminar at half price. If you want to know more, just drop me an email. That's Veronica at the Shame Free Zone, Veronica at the Shame Free Zone.com. And I will send you a link so you can sign up. Okay, so without further ado, tonight we're going to be interviewing Karen Solomon. Now, Karen and I have known each other quite a few years. We met over at Harbin Hot Springs years and years ago. Okay, it wasn't that long. But anyway, she's an amazing woman. Her company is called Success Appeal, Complete Confidence from the Bedroom to the Boardroom. And she is part of a brand new book here. She's got, I think, a chapter or two in it. It's called Savvy Leadership Strategies for Women. And this book actually has a really beautiful blurb on the back cover from Lynn Twist. Savvy Leadership Strategies for Women is a must-have resource for any woman who considers herself a leader or wants to move into a leadership position. These accomplished women, top leaders themselves, have come together to provide a comprehensive collection of tools and insights that will help all women step more powerfully into their roles as leaders in the 21st century, deeply inspiring them to lead change with confidence, charisma, and clarity. That's from Lynn Twist, author of The Soul of Money and founder of the Soul of Money Institute. Lynn Twist is also the founder of Pachamama. And maybe no coincidence here, Karen Solomon is a Stewardship Circle member of the Pachamama Alliance and also facilitates Awakening the Dreamer Symposium. And Karen has a program called Men, Sex, and Money. We want to hear more about that. Karen, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
It's a pleasure to be here, Veronica.
I'm glad. This is, I think, the first time I've interviewed you, even though I've known you for several years, huh?
It's exciting, I know. Maybe it's a beginning of more things to come together.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Now, before we, I think we're all men, sex, and money. We want to know about that. Is that what you wrote about in the book, or did you write about something else?
Well, actually, I was asked to join this book, which is about, as you said, it's called Savvy Leadership Strategies for Women. And since it was more geared toward the business woman, what I wrote about, I have a couple different bodies of work, Veronica, and I can't wait to spend most of our time tonight talking about Men, Sex, and Money, which is a seminar series and a whole body of work directed for women. The whole title of that, by the way, is Men, Sex, and Money, A Conversation for Women. which is, of course, one of my favorite conversations. But we'll get back to it. But for Savvy Leadership Strategies, I've had an image consulting business for 25 years. And it's not just about dressing people. It's really about assisting people in having how they present themselves in the world physically represent who they really are so that there's no mistake. And so the name of my chapter is Success Appeal, which, as you told everybody, is the name of the business. And it's about showing up as the leader you are through your clothing, your confidence, and your charisma. So I really, that's what we talk about there. And it was fun to write it, and it made me want to write lots more. But no, this particular one is more about how do you maintain confidence, eye contact, how you dress, all those kinds of things for being a woman that's really able to make it in a leadership role in a world that is still quite unfortunately tilted a little bit toward the male paradigm.
Now, are these things, I mean, dress for success, is that really something that's a current concern? I mean, a lot of companies now, people are wearing jeans to work. It seems like Americans run around in sweatpants most of the time. So I'm just wondering, do you really think that that makes a difference in one's professional trajectory?
You know, I don't just think it makes a difference. I know it does because this is a time when things are much more much more competitive out there in the workplace, both in the entrepreneurial workplace as well as the corporate workplace. More and more people are being unemployed. More and more people are trying to strike it out on their own in an entrepreneurial way, whether it's through a direct marketing company or a consulting business or all different kinds of things. And you know, it might sound trite to some people, but you really do not get a second chance to make that first impression be great. And it's a concern. It's interesting. Actually, it's funny. I just went and did a workout at the gym. I'm over here in Centerville, and I work out at the JCC, and I was there earlier this evening, and I was talking to one of the women there, and she happens to own a speaker bureau where she helps place speakers. And we got to chatting about, I have an upcoming very exciting trip to Europe and a women's conference in Italy I'm going to. And she said that she has an issue. She said, oh, my God, you're an image consultant. She said, I think I need your help with my clients. So we're looking at doing something together because she will have, you know, a company. She places people in corporate speaking situations. And she'll have somebody who might be an expert on marketing or sales, and she wants to place them, but she realizes they don't look good. They don't look the part. They might be excellent at what they do, but she said she sends, now it's all done video, you know, it's all done by digital, so she'll send a video clip of her potential speakers for the company, of her clients, to the potential speaking venue, and they will take one look, and if they don't like the way the person looks and how savvy or professional or whatever, they will not hire them. They'll just say next. So
well, especially now, I'm sure the market is incredibly competitive.
Right. So the way I say, you know what, use everything you got.
Use everything you've got. Okay. So what is, like, the number one rule about dressing for success? Should you dress for the job you want or the job you have? Should you walk in wearing your, you know, really expensive clothes, or should you try not to overwhelm the person who's interviewing you?
All of the above.
Okay.
I think it's so subjective, Veronica. I think one thing I say to people is do your homework, which means be prepared, like the old Boy Scout and Girl Scout motto, be prepared. Find out what is the corporate environment or what is the small company environment that you're going into if you're interviewing or if you're selling to them or if you're just presenting, doing a speech somewhere. Find out who you're speaking to because it's no fun to show up wearing your slick Armani suit and find out that, as you were saying, everybody's dressed down in Silicon Valley. You start looking like an insurance salesperson or something. And unless you really are one, probably not a great idea to try to look like something you're not. You want to find out the company you're going to be in. I'm not just talking about the corporation, but who are you going to be spending the time with? You want to feel comfortable with them. Now, that said, one of the most difficult areas of getting dressed is that whole, that middle ground between the business suit and, as you were saying, people just go to work in sweats. There's the whole thing called Casually Smart, which is really how I started my business 25 years ago. They started having dress-down Fridays back in the 80s, you know? And the guys really didn't have a clue what to do. They basically had their business suits or their sport jackets, or they had their gym clothes. There wasn't a whole lot in between. So there's been a humongous, especially for, and I do work with men as well, love working with men, there's just a huge kind of casual in between the business suit and the dress down for just home on Saturdays wardrobe selections. And so that's what I like to work with. And you just want to work with color, style. You said you wear your most expensive. Again, if you're going to go be working with people who might be wearing a lot of couture clothing and very expensive clothing, it'd probably be good if you had some too. No matter what you spent on it, make sure that they're good fabrics and the colors work for you. So, and just one more tag along to finish answering your question. We said, what's the most important thing about being prepared? Follow that all the way through. If you're going to have an important meeting or interview the next day, or even a date, Veronica, this isn't just about work.
Ah.
Date, it's not just dress for success.
Success strategies
dating.
For dating as well, huh?
Oh, absolutely. It's like, you know, wow, you have a hot date. Wouldn't it be nice, especially for us women, if we're particularly hormonal and maybe we've gained a few pounds and we think we've gained 50, but we've gained 2, but you know how we get about our bodies. What if we were able to pick something out of our closet that we absolutely know looks fabulous on us? Maybe if you have, like for myself, I wear lots of greens and gold because I have green and gold in my eyes. Somebody else who's got blue eyes, they absolutely know every time they wear certain shades of blue, people go, oh, your eyes, oh, you look wonderful. What if you were to wear your absolute best color near your face and some pants that you know fit your body terrifically, and you have your new briefcase or your new tote bag or whatever, and your shoes look great, and you just know you look great? Even if you're just shaking in your boots, so to shaking in those boots that look great, and you're nervous, you have a heck of a lot better chance of feeling great than when you're hearing people say, "You just look great. Oh my God, you just look healthy and well, and what a nice. Your eyes are so blue." If you get compliments, chances are you're going to start feeling better and better about yourself. Now, I tell people, look, especially at that party, you're feeling hormonal and you just want to kind of hide. You know, you still might feel hormonal and not feel good about yourself, but it's a lot easier to feel good about yourself if you absolutely know you're in a great outfit and if everybody's complimenting you on that. Then it's really not true that you don't look good. You just think you don't, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh. Well, and confidence is whatever makes you feel confident, right? But if that is the other thing, like you, confidence is a big factor. How can one be confident if they're nervous?
Breathing. I noticed that I almost launched right in to answer that question out of my own nervousness to do it right, haha. And I went, wait a minute.
You're walking your talk.
I'm breathing my breath. It's taking that breath. It's like you get up on stage, and even if you know your stuff cold, you've studied, you've prepared, you've got your outline, it's a friendly audience, all of a sudden you're up there and there's lights in your face and people are clapping for you and it's kind of like everything goes quiet and it's just you and everybody's looking at you. Oh my gosh, it can be, you just want to, some people just want to leave their bodies. They do. They kind of, their psyche just goes flying up in the around the ceiling somewhere. Most important thing to do, two things. Number one, take a deep breath and feel your feet on the ground. You will think that this is taking 15 minutes. I promise you it's taking nanoseconds. Take a breath, feel your feet in the ground, and look directly at somebody in the front row. And now take another breath and look at somebody else in the front row or right behind. There's somewhere that easy eye contact.
Right.
And by the time you've taken that, not even the third breath, but you've looked, maybe you spent 3 seconds, maybe 4 seconds with each of three people, like 1, 2, 3, and another breath, 1, 2, 3, and a third person, you will first of all, you'll be so grounded, people will be, and every person in the room who maybe was, you know, whispering and talking and you didn't quite have them yet, because you've been quiet and you've looked people in the eye, everyone in that room will feel connected to you, Veronica. way more connected than if you're one of these like slick speakers. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? How you doing? They come out and they're just all talk and moving around and scanning the audience. I myself, when I hear speakers like that and witness speakers like that, I want them to stop, make eye contact, ground, slow down. So if you can just do that, that's a way to every single time make yourself more comfortable, and you'll have the audience in the palm of your hand.
So what is the other key to a success strategy? You've got dress for success, you've got confidence. What else?
We talk about charisma.
Yes.
And that's, charisma is, you know, when you think of, it's funny, when I was doing some research for the chapter I was writing, Veronica, I was looking up, if you Google the word charisma, you will find one of the first people that they mention is President Bill Clinton, as a man who quintessentially exhibits charisma all the time. And if you think about him, no matter what your politics are, that man connected with people. He said, used people's first names. He made eye contact. He laughed. He reached for the children. He reached over to make sure that he connected with the child. He put his arm around people, and he was genuinely friendly, genuinely connected. My husband, maybe he's listening right now. My husband Billy actually was working for a company where President Clinton and Vice President Gore visited the company down in Silicon Valley shortly after they'd been elected. And he was in line, you know, the two gentlemen were walking down shaking everybody's hand. And Billy watched them coming down the row toward him, and he thought, yeah, you know, this guy, wow, he's a politician. And he said, kind of thinking, isn't that slick, he's connecting with everybody. He said when President Clinton got to him and shook his hand and looked him in the eye, he couldn't believe how present that man was with him.
Yeah.
And they had like a 5-second, 10-second chat because they're both from the South or whatever they said. He said, whoa, that dude was present. I just got to connect with the president. It wasn't just like being in the room with them. So I think that's a naturally good sense of humor, usually charismatic people. And confidence and charisma are pretty close. But somebody can have a whole lot of confidence, Veronica, about like what they do, about their expertise, but maybe they're super shy, and they don't, you know, they just feel kind of self-conscious. Maybe they're self-conscious about their body or about making eye contact. It's too intimate for them. So there's a difference. Although most charismatic people have a lot of confidence, not all confident people have charisma. But it
is. So what's the difference between confidence and charisma?
Well, confidence is just being confident of your topic, being confident that you're going to win a race, that you're going to be a good mom, that you just aced a test. You're confident. I'm going to go take that test today.
Ah, yes, gotcha.
You're confident.
So charisma is really about being able to make the person in front of you like you.
Bingo.
Yeah.
It's basically selling yourself. Darn straight it is. It's about you're selling yourself. And as a speaker or as a presenter, or how about when you're dating? Wouldn't it be nice to have some charisma? It doesn't mean you're going to have to be the most outgoing, friendly person. Because if you're dating, if you're going to have a date with one person, you might want to have your attention on that person and not be out, you know, meeting and greeting everybody around you. But on the other hand, wouldn't it be nice if you felt comfortable and confident in your own skin and in your own body and in your clothes, such that you could then make eye contact with this new person in your life that you're excited about being with. And that would be feeling comfortable enough to make that eye contact and shake their hand and maybe have a yummy goodnight kiss or whatever. I mean, all of that requires being able to connect. And what did you say? Make them like you?
Exactly. That's right. Make them like you.
Yep. It's really important.
Okay. So, but let's face it. You know, I haven't met Bill. I have some friends who have, and I've heard that all the rumors are true. He is an amazingly charismatic person. Did meet Joe Kennedy one time, and that ability to just turn so much energy in your direction.
Who did you just say?
the ability to turn so much energy in your direction.
No, I'm sorry. Which person did you say you're talking about right now?
Oh, Joe Kennedy, senator from, I think it's Massachusetts. Met him years ago.
Oh, Senator Ted Kennedy.
No, not Ted.
The senator from Massachusetts was Ted Kennedy. Anyway, okay.
Yeah, I might have the state wrong, but talking about the Kennedy with blonde curly hair.
Okay.
Don't know him? Or maybe you do. Do you know the Kennedys?
Well, I'm from Massachusetts. I don't know the Kennedys, but I certainly know a lot about them. But anyway, we won't belabor it, but you're talking about that
yes.
you met one of the Kennedys.
Joe Kennedy, whichever state he represents.
Joe Kennedy, okay.
which I'll tell you in a minute, actually, because I'm pulling up his Wikipedia. But I met him back in the 80s at a fundraiser for him. And was really amazed at how much attention he could throw on one human being. And
right.
At one point it was me, and I couldn't hardly think or talk. It seems that kind of... he was born in Boston, Massachusetts. So it's interesting to me that people have that ability, but oftentimes it seems like they're almost born with it or possibly at least had certain influences in their childhood. What would you say to somebody who is, you know, lacking in that department? How would you even begin to build charisma? How could you possibly cultivate that?
Just like let's take an example of somebody who's particularly shy.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be? I would say the first thing I would say is, well, you know, you're going to have to be a speaker or something, and you're concerned that you're not going to have any charisma, and you're very shy. I hear that. Let's think of a part of your life where, let's say somebody's a mom. I'm going to say, now, you're not shy with your child at home, right? Aren't you? I've seen plenty of moms, you know, connecting with their children, and they're like right in there and making eye contact and feeling great and humoring their child, or they're laughing, and, you know, they're not shy with their good friends. Think about how that feels. And realize that when you're in front of an audience or you're interviewing, these are just human beings. They can actually become your friend if you want them to. And how are you going to do that? You're going to connect one person at a time, because lots of times that shyness comes out of some fear. Fear not only, Veronica, of seeing what's out there, but fear of being seen. And so, again, it all kind of plays together, because if you know that you look great, you have less fear of being seen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. I don't have to hide because I'm wearing my ugly old clothes or something. I know I look great. Okay, I can let that one go. Check, right? It's like your checklist. Look good. Check. Now, let's see. Do I know my information? Yep, I'm prepared. Check. Prepared. So if you make sure you've got all of that other stuff in place, and now what's left is... Okay, all right, Bill Clinton. I'm never going to be Bill Clinton. I'm not going to be, like, you know, that outgoing. Okay, we're not going to be unrealistic here. I'm going to always be more quiet and reserved. However, I can make eye contact with the best of them, right? Make eye contact. Breathe. Think of compliments. If you're really that shy and it's not easy for you to come by connecting with people, just maybe you make it a practice that when you walk into somebody's office, you find one or two things to compliment that person on. Wow, I love the color of the walls. What a great view. And if it's another woman and you want to talk about clothes, ooh, nice new boots, or whatever it is, find a compliment. And that's a way in to making somebody feel good, thus, as you said before, Veronica, making them like you. Give them the gift of a compliment. When you give people gifts, they tend to like you more.
Just for our listeners, in case they wondered which Joseph Kennedy I was talking about, I was just amazed. I did a search on Google here. There's all kinds of Joe Kennedys. I was referring to Joseph Patrick Kennedy II, who was born in 1952 and was the 8th Congressional District House of Representatives.
So he was a congressman.
And he was a senator, which
is what threw me off.
Yeah. And he was from Massachusetts from 1987 to 1999. He was in the House of Representatives for Massachusetts.
And you knew him, you said?
Oh, no. Just met him at a fundraiser. And it is amazing to me how some people have charisma that is just so incredibly infectious. You know, I mean, people just followed him around the room. They,
right.
Like they couldn't help themselves.
I
think, you know, some of the charisma, and I, you know, as far as how, what I think operates a lot of times is actually, believe it or not, Karen, this might seem like a real departure from our conversation, but the ancient courtesans had a lot of charisma. And I think that's, for modern-day courtesans, it's still a really, really important skill set. And it, so much of that has to do with making the person in front of you feel like they are the only person. And, you know, simply just complimenting somebody on their decor, their clothing choices, doesn't really get you to that point where you have this infectious charisma. I think a lot of it has to be where you really tune into that person, and if you're able to track their energy and just be with them in a way where they feel completely heard and like you get them. So I think, you know, eye contact was one thing that you brought out, very, very important. But I think it's also really important to do active listening so the person gets that you are hearing them and that hopefully you're hearing them compassionately or in a way that's meaningful. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a perfect segue over to the other body of work that we're going to talk about, Veronica. And first of all, I was actually coming for... First of all, what we're talking about is not in the least but mutually exclusive. We're totally agreeing with each other. I was specifically referring to when somebody's giving a presentation or a speech about charisma. That's
uh-huh.
really where I was coming from, where it's not just one-on-one.
Right.
But I was really talking more in a business situation because we were talking about the savvy leadership strategies. So let's go over to what you're talking about. You talked about the, we're going to talk about modern-day courtesans. And in a funny way, any of us, I mean, people might say, well, courtesans are prostitutes. Well, whatever you want to call them, we're all that in one way or another, even if we're married or we're in partnership. We want to be putting our attention on our partners such that our partners feel great about themselves and want to continue to be with us, and vice versa. We want to be make it so that that we are, what did you say, make people like us? That we are likable and that we are likable and lovable such that somebody would like to stay with us as well. So I think let me talk a little bit about my men, sex, and money body of work, because I think I'm going to answer your question through that. Does that
Great.
Work for you?
Go for it.
Great. Well, for the last 25 years, I have not been raising children, as many of my friends have, and instead what I've been doing is studying. I've been doing a ton of research in the realms of relationship regarding men-women, relationship to money, the conversation between men and women about money and about sex. And what I absolutely know is that for relationships to make it, to be long-term relationships or deep relationships between men and women, between men and women romantically, men and women partners in business, all issues pertaining to sex and money need to be addressed. It's all about communication. When I say sex, of course I'm talking about sex, the act of sex, intercourse, foreplay, all the things regarding sex, but I'm also talking about intimacy in general. When I talk about money, I'm not just talking about how much things cost and how much do you make. I'm talking about kind of the third dimension, like what kind of value systems, what kind of house do you want to live in, how do you want to raise children, what kind of vacations do you want to take, do you want to work, do you not want to work, how much do you charge, do you want to be a stay-at-home mother, do you want him to be a stay-at-home father and you go to work. All of those things are about sex and money. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And so what I realized is that we've all gone to school for years for all kinds of things. We've gone to school for everything from, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and French and Spanish, and learning how to sail, and learning how to ski, and learning how to, you know, do finances in terms of financial planning, if that's what somebody does for a living. We've learned about law. We've learned about if somebody's a courtesan, they've learned about that. We learn to take up musical instruments. And some of us have actually studied how to be better lovers. And some of us have actually studied how to make money or how to keep money or how to talk about these things. And what it all boils down to is communication. So I've been studying with many different Tantra teachers, Western Tantra teachers, and I even, when I was not making enough money to really do what I wanted to do in life, I checked out a 12-step program back in the 80s called Debtors Anonymous and realized that, wow, I wasn't a debtor, but I was an under-earner. I wasn't earning enough money. So I got some of the principles from that program to empower me to be able to figure out how to do money on the real basic levels. I mean, you can learn how to go do the stock market and, you know, make savings. But if you don't know how to simply pay your bills, put some money aside so when your car registration comes due, again in October like it has for the last 8 years, because if you've noticed, it'll say the same little month every year on your license plate, right? And yet
right.
Some people are so vague, they'll say, well, I didn't know my car registration was due. It's like, really? It's due every year at the same time. But, you know, they say, Veronica, that like in Alcoholics Anonymous, for instance, alcohol can be deadly, right? And it's the same way in, like, with Narcotics Anonymous, any of those things, drugs can kill you. Well, they say that when people have money issues, vagueness can be terminal, the opposite of being clear. And what I've noticed is that women in particular can be very unclear or vague about money. And we need to stop being vague and start getting clear about what we want to earn, about what kind of man we might want to attract in terms of, do we want him to pay our way? Do we want to pay our way? Do we want to go Dutch in life, so to speak? All these things need to be talked about. So I've studied with Morehouse University. You might have heard of them. I've studied with them.
Yep.
I've studied with many people.
And for our listeners, however, Karen, they don't know what the Morehouse is, so can you just kind of give them a rundown
on that? Oh, sure. I'm sorry about that. Back in the 60s, a man named Victor Barranco and his wife Susie were having a really great time sexually, and they decided to find out what was published in the realm of particularly female orgasm, and they found the only publication they could find was Masters and Johnson, and it basically described female orgasm kind of exactly like it described male orgasm, where there's a little bit of foreplay and X number of contractions, and that was it. And they looked at each other and said, it's way more than that. They couldn't believe that that's the only thing out there. So what they did, based on their own personal research into their own pleasure and her pleasure, they started to teach their friends what they knew. And then they actually at one point had a fully accredited university called Moore University. The word Moore coming from having more in life. And
so that wasn't their last name?
Nope.
I didn't know that was from Moore.
His last name was Victor Barranco.
I did not know that.
Right.
I heard about them all these years. I've never been to any of them, you know, but they're kind of defunct now, aren't they?
Not at all.
They still exist?
Yeah. But anyway, they're based in Lafayette, California, is one of their main places. But at one point, Veronica, back in the 80s, they had over 80 houses around the United States that were called Moore Houses. And there's still one on Hamilton Drive in Oakland. There's one in Yonkers, New York. I mean, there's quite a few. And
have you heard of One Taste?
Yes, One Taste is a
Yeah, Nicole Dedon, the founder of One Taste, actually came out of the Moore House.
Absolutely, and she does give credit. I've been to some of her things, and I was happy to hear her giving credit where credit was due.
Yeah.
Because she absolutely bases her work. It's based on, and Moore House strategy, just so you know, is really founded upon the premise that everyone is perfect. It doesn't mean all their behaviors are perfect.
Sure.
You know, it doesn't mean an axe murderer, you know, does good things, but they're basically perfect. And that's what Victor Barranco believed in, that people need to realize that they themselves are perfect. They can change behaviors, perhaps. But what I've learned through Morehouse, and I've studied with them quite extensively, what I've learned, the most important things I've learned that I bring into the Men, Sex, and Money course is about communication. And that's learning how to, as you were saying earlier about putting your attention on the courtesan or whatever, learning how to put your attention on another person such that, as that you are hearing them, and having some communication techniques so that you know that you're being heard. And I teach those in the course, as a matter of fact. And what I always like to do, though, is we get in a circle. It's always a women's circle. I don't care if there's 50 women or 100. We like to be in circle, and I don't mean necessarily sit. You know what I'm saying? It's not your classroom style. It's really everybody's participating.
Uh-huh.
And I really like that. And I want to hear from women what they want in their lives. And if you look up the word want, it's about lack. What are they lacking in their lives? What is their desire? What would they like to have more of? And then we as women all witness each other in that, in our desires, so that we can really start to raise the bar and be able to ask more from the world that we're in, you know? And because if we don't know what we want, how is a man or a woman partner going to be able to give us what we want if we're not clear, right? How is that possible? So we have to start from there. And then throughout and it's a 3-day course with follow-up teleseminars, and it's a whole series. But the initial 2.5-day course is really about getting in touch with our desires, and it's about releasing some of the stuff that keeps us stuck, like old patterns about money, like, oh, I'm broke. Well, if you keep telling yourself you're broke, you'll probably be broke. But so let's, like, reframe some. It's not therapy, but we do release some of the old things by learning kind of what is it that's been keeping us stuck. And what are some, and so we do things called withholds. Like Veronica, one of the communications things that we talk about are, what if you and I are partners, okay? And what if every time I cook dinner for you and you've agreed to do the dishes, but you never wipe the counters and it really bothers me? And it might sound superficial, right? But what if I never let you know that bothers me? But it bothers me all the time. That's something that I'm withholding from you. Just a little communication. Does that make sense?
Oh, yep. I've heard of the concept. I understand
okay.
it.
And the concept, right. So what if there were a way for me to just say, for you and me to sit down and say, you know, are you withholding anything from me? Is there anything, because the biggest withhold is love. Is there anything in the way of us just having love now? And then what if there was an actual a structured way to do that communication such that it could land without making you feel bad? Because it's not your problem that you didn't wipe the kitchen counter. You could care less. You didn't even notice, perhaps. But it's my problem. So therefore, it's something that I have withheld from you. And if I could just say, Veronica, there's something I've withheld from you, and you could say, okay, would you like to tell me? And if I said, yeah, just would you do me a favor? It would make me feel so much better if you would just wipe the counters when you do the kitchen. You could say simply, thank you. It's not a conversation. Do you see what I'm saying? I've now got it off my chest, so to speak. You've heard people say that, right? Got it off my chest. But what if that's happening when you're making love with somebody? What if they're constantly...
Well, trickier, isn't it, to try to negotiate that?
Right, but what if... Instead of just saying, I have a withhold from you, I hate the way you touch me. Yeah, good luck, right? You want another date? Ha ha. But what about if you could say to them, like, what if you really don't, what if they're touching you too hard in certain places and it's too rough? What if you could say to them, wow, I love the way you're paying attention to me. I love that you're paying attention to me right now and that it's not about you and that you want my pleasure. Would you mind touching me a little bit lighter? Thank you. Now, what you've just done is something called the training cycle, meaning you're going to train them how to touch you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you just say to them, ew, I don't like the way you're touching me. Touch me lighter.
So training cycle, do you have that trademarked?
It's not. It's Morehouse. Morehouse did it.
Ah, that's a Morehouse.
No, I got that from Morehouse.
Yeah,
I got that from Morehouse, and they're very, very generous with it because they know the world's a better place if we learn how to... Your training cycle. And so that's from them for sure, and it's not trademarked. As a matter of fact, they just want credit where credit is due, and I'm happy to give them credit for that because it's a wonderful, wonderful tool where you simply, it's not that different than you do with a kid, a little kid, or your dog. I mean, it's behavior modification. You're a dog owner, right?
I have a cute little sweetheart by the name of Amelie.
Okay, and when you were training Amelie when she was a puppy, You didn't, like, tell her she was bad to try to have her learn how to do things. You said, oh, what a good girl, right?
That's positive reinforcement. It's the best way to train, yes.
That's
although,
right. And
they, you know, you can do negative, but it's...
Well, and the way to do negative is if you couch it in positive, you're going to get a whole lot further with sugar than salt, right? And if you want to say to some...
Go ahead.
I'm just going to finish that one thought and just say, so you know, if you don't like something, instead of saying, ew, I don't like it, what if you say, wow, find something you do like. Oh, I just love that you're paying attention. Or I love that you brought me flowers tonight. Would you mind doing the dishes or something before you make that request that might turn them off a little bit? Butter them up. Really, it works.
Butter them up. Well, that can work for sure. So, Karen, what do you think are some of the special obstacles that women have when it comes to sex and money? I think the culture gives women some messages that they should not want either. That, you know, that if they want sex, maybe they're a slut. And if they want money, they're greedy. And there are some research studies out there that just recently came up with, I guess, women, when they go to get a job, just pretty much accept the salary that's offered to them. Most men will ask for more than what's being offered. And in most instances, the men will actually get more. It doesn't mean they're going to get what they asked for, but they just end up getting more. So do you think women have some special obstacles that they have to work past when it comes to sex and money in that respect?
Well, let me just respond to the one thing about the accepting the salary and men getting more. I think quite unfortunately, we're still women in the workplace, the traditional business culture. Women are still, I believe, making 80% of what men make. Sometimes it's 50%, but we're not up to making 100% across the board. So I think that unfortunately we're speaking, and there's still that glass ceiling where women are having hard to, it's getting better, but are having a hard time penetrating the upper levels of executive management and that kind of thing, where the big bucks are happening in corporations. But back to what you're saying, but what you were asking me is about what are some of the barriers about, for women? Why don't you ask that?
Well, I think culturally women get this message that they are allowed to do things for their husbands, for their children, for other people, for charities. But as far as having authentic desires around sex or money, that becomes a bit taboo.
Thank you. That is probably the number one reason why I do my Men, Sex, and Money course. Seriously, Veronica, it's because I had one woman take my course once, and I do them on weekends quite a bit because people do work, but I love to do them during the week. And I had one woman take the 2.5 days off from work to do the workshop. I swear she didn't even need to do the workshop. For her, the whole workshop was being willing to give herself 2.5 days off, not because her kid was sick, not because she was sick, but because she simply, it was her pleasure and her desire to go be with women for 2.5 days. And that, for her, was such a wonderful milestone. And that's how we start. That's why I don't even start talking about sex or money. I start by saying, what is it that you desire? If money weren't a barrier, if really, what is it that you desire? And sometimes it comes out in a little tiny whisper, I just want to be a stay-at-home mom and have somebody else pay my way. Huh. For someone else's, you know, it could be very different than that. And so I really want us to learn to be selfish. I mean, I don't know about you, but my mom sure did not demonstrate that. How about you?
I just recently asked her if she was sorry that she hadn't realized some of her dreams. She always wanted to be a music teacher. And she says, no, I have learned to live with disappointment or something like that.
Oh my gosh, is that
is that sad or what? Huh? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, it's I think women model a lot of this disappointment. And self-deprecation. I think about a mother that I saw at the gym climbing on the bathroom scales, you know, to weigh herself, and just looking disgusted and appalled at whatever number she saw there. And Then her little 8-year-old girl got up there and weighed herself and did the same thing, pantomimed the whole disgusted and appalled body language.
Isn't that sad, isn't it?
Learned this at a very early age, that it's not okay to want, and I think women oftentimes bond around what they don't have, what they're not happy about.
Don't they call it commiserating?
I'd love to see women start bragging. That would be so awesome if women would bond around bragging.
Do you know that I actually have a piece in my workshop that I call Bragging Rights?
No, tell us about that. I did not know that, and I think that's great.
Very important. It's very important. It's like, because we're always going, nah, it was nothing. Excuse me? You just got a PhD or you just raised a kid. It was nothing. Who are you kidding? It was nothing. It was completely something. It was like, how dare we not think that we're doing a great job? You know, we have absolute every reason in the world and every right in the world to have bragging rights. And I think that, imagine if when we got together as women, we were able to just say, like the 3 to 5, like what I do is I go around the room, I want to hear 3 to 5 things that you think are just great about yourself. And people go, oh, no, I can't do that. It's like, fine, then I'll find 3 to 5 things great about you. Good, now repeat after me. You know what I mean? Let's exercise that bragging muscle. And it's not coming from bravado, but it's coming from a level of simply loving ourselves, because if we don't love ourselves, how is somebody else going to love us?
Don't think that's possible. So tell us a little bit about the bragging rights part of your Men, Money, and Sex course. Do the women do a circle where they, each person?
Well, it's usually part of the intro, and I mean, we do it throughout, too. I mean, I really want to hear from women. Who are you? What are your accomplishments? What is it that you have in your life that, like who are you other than who's your mother, who's your father, what's your work, you know, but really, who are you? What's one of your biggest accomplishments? You know, it's like somebody said that to me recently, and I looked at them and I said, surviving breast cancer twice. You know what I mean? I don't want to go down that track, but I mean, darn, I'm proud of myself.
No, seriously, you survived it twice?
Yeah, I mean, I had it twice, and thank God for diagnostics, mammograms and MRIs, and, you know, I've had double mastectomies, and I thank God for plastic surgeons. I'm a big believer. You know, and it's another story for a different interview, Veronica, but my point is, I mean, if I'm not going to be proud of saving my life and doing what I needed to take, I wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? I'm proud of doing what I needed to do to come out the other side to have less than 1% chance of having breast cancer again. And somebody else should be proud as hell of what a great job they've done parenting. Or somebody else should be proud of their flower garden. Or look at the beautiful clothes that they make. Or for yourself, the book you've written and this wonderful radio show that you're giving me the opportunity to be on. I mean, you know, or did I wrote a chapter in this book? And sure, why shouldn't we be proud of ourselves instead of saying, oh, golly, it was nothing? You know what I mean? We're kind of learned to say it was nothing. I want bragging rights. I want to hear from my girlfriends. What'd you do? Tell me something great about yourself. And maybe it's because, as you say, we just don't do that. Our mothers didn't do that. We thought we were supposed to be so humble.
Well, yes, it goes past humility and into self-effacement, though. It's, you know.
Wait a minute. What do you mean it goes past humility?
Oh, where women are, you know, they're really denigrating themselves. There's almost like a competition to see who's the worst. Oh, no, you're not fat. I'm fat. Or, you know, sure,
I hear you completely.
Girlfriends who played the, who's the worst, you know?
And it's so painful, like you said, that story you told me really made me, my heart hurt about the mother on the scale and the little girl on the scale.
I know.
It's because they're going to just parrot us. And for me, Veronica, you know, I'm in my 50s. I have stepchildren and step-grandchildren, but I do not have my own kids. And what I know is that if somebody like me had been in my life as very rigorously saying, helping me to love myself more, you may be asking me questions. Do you want to have a baby? Or, you know, instead of me just kind of, you know, kind of glumping along, or maybe I will, maybe I won't. If I can talk to some of these 20 and 30 somethings, particularly that age group for my workshops, if I can talk to them and help them get clear about, do they want to be a mom? Do they not want to? What kind of partner might they want to attract? Or, gee, you know, you're kind of just being a waitress, but you have a college degree, and, you know, is this what you want to do? Oh, well, just if I could help some women get more clear and be less vague, then that would be an accomplishment. And I've done that with quite a few women. And if I could... Not only that, I mean, like you and I know that we're going to be even better friends after these past few phone calls we've had and after this interview, Veronica, but, I mean, I love my girlfriends, and we do support each other, and we're not self-effacing. As a matter of fact, my close girlfriends won't let me do that, and I won't let them do that. You know what I mean? I bust them like, what are you talking about, fat? Okay, so you lose a couple pounds. It doesn't mean you're fat. Even if you were, you're lovable and smart and beautiful. You know what I mean? It's like... I don't want my girlfriends to do that. Do you?
I find it pretty obnoxious, actually. So here we are. We are coming up. We've got about 2 minutes left of the show. And I want to make sure people know how to find your book. So what would
Great.
You recommend?
Well, the best thing to do is to go onto my website, which is successappeal.com, just like it sounds, successappeal. .com, and you can actually sign up for free 10 free tips for more confidence, and you can order my book right there. And you can also, you know, at this moment I'm just redoing my shopping cart and schedule, but I do have a men's sex and money course scheduled to be in most likely in Marin County, possibly in San Francisco, and that's going to be happening on the weekend prior to Halloween. It's going to be on October the 21st, 2nd, and 3rd. And I would welcome questions and registrations for that.
Fabulous. And how should they contact you?
Karen@successappeal.com. And I can also, I'm happy to give you my phone number.
Please do.
707-540-5909. That's 707-540-5909. You can reach me directly on that line, and I'm very good about both emails and phone contact and getting back to you.
Well, thank you, Karen. Thanks so much for being in the Shame-Free Zone. To our listeners, I also want to let you know the book, again, is Savvy Leadership Strategies for Women. You can find it on Amazon.
And just on my website.
Accessibility.com. And to remind you, too, that I am teaching a teleseminar called Befriend Your Inner Whore. I'm teaching this teleseminar for the next 2 weeks with Francesca Gentile. And if you want more information about that, you can call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. That's 888-903-0050. I know a lot of you do not like to pick up the telephone. So, you can also find this on Facebook. Just go over to Facebook, look for events, Befriend Your Inner Whore Teleseminar. We have an event page up there, and we're going to be doing the teleseminar tomorrow, starting at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Okay. Thanks so much for joining us in the Shame-Free Zone, and I will see you next Monday.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian.